Morning News is brought to you by Sprague Sports on 32nd Street, Yuma's hunting and shooting headquarters and responsible gun ownership since 1956.
Truckmates, Yuma's Fix Up, your pickup truck store, is Yuma's home for Snug Top shells and lids. Snug Top, designed and manufactured to the highest standard, industry-leading quality, and trend-setting design that protect and complement your vehicle. That's Snug Top. Truckmates is also your Line-X spray-in bed liner dealer. Line-X, number one in America for spray-in bed liners. With nationwide warranty coverage, is now available and installed by Yuma's most experienced spray-on team at Truckmates. So protect your vehicle inside and out with Line-X spray and bed liners and Snug Top shells and lids at Truckmates. Truckmates is also your home for BDS suspensions, the highest quality aftermarket suspension lift kits, leveling kits, and accessories for 4x4 off-road truck and Jeep enthusiasts. And BDS suspensions are backed by the best lifetime warranty in the industry. BDS suspensions, Line-X spray and bed liners, and Snug Top shells and lids at Truckmates in its brand new building, same location, 32nd Street next to Lowe's.
Here's the news in 60 seconds, YumaDailyNews.com. The Arizona Farm Bureau is reporting that people in Yuma and the rest of the state are paying more than they did in previous years for Thanksgiving. Read the story and see if you agree. YumaDailyNews.com. San Luis Police will be increasing safety enforcement with more patrols throughout the Thanksgiving weekend. The department says that, as a reminder, violations of traffic law restrictions are punishable by fines and possible jail time. A new voice is coming to town. Starting spring 2022, Arizona Western College students will begin making podcast episodes for The Voice, created by students for the students. Read the latest on this project, YumaDailyNews.com. Yuma Ballet Academy announced that this year they will be bringing back Sugar Plum Tea and the Christmas favorite, the Nutcracker. Read our exclusive interview with the ballet to learn more. YumaDailyNews.com. Make sure you follow us on Facebook and Twitter for more local updates. Yuma Daily News, I'm Andrew Caravella.
The following program on 560 KBLU is a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Good morning, Yuma. This is Sean Garner. I'm in studio with Mr. Russ Clark. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
And we also have a special guest with us this morning. Yes, she is a special guest. I see Russ whispering in her voice there. Her name is Lana. We call her Lana in the office, but her full name is Svetlana Leon Guerrero. Pronounce that for me better.
Svetlana Leon Guerrero.
It almost sounds
Hello, good
Russian.
Morning.
It is Russian.
What?
You know, a couple weeks ago we had Jonathan
Svetlana
on the.
I like it.
Yeah, he was. Jonathan was on the show, and his last name is Guerrero. No, it's Guadarrama. Sorry.
Speak into the mic.
Guadarrama.
Ignore him, or you can turn it to face him. That's fine. Yeah.
And he had a really interesting story about how his family, his father stood up to some, it was violence by the cartel, and testified in a murder case, and then due to threats to his family, they had to flee to the United States.
Yeah.
And they were true refugees from violence there. And he's made quite an impact here, especially in our firm. He's gone through the educational system here in Yuma, and he is nearly graduated from NAU Yuma, and almost got his bachelor's degree, and he is a paralegal in my office and is doing quite well. And I've got next to me now his colleague, and this is Lana. And she has an interesting story in her own right. And I was just talking to her out of curiosity over the past couple months about her background and how she came to America and why and what the different political takes she grew up with as a Russian citizen. So, Lana, give us a brief background of where you were born and how you grew up, where you lived when you grew up.
Good morning again. Well, I was born and grew up in, it was Soviet Russia back then. It was before the Soviet Union fell. I grew up in a small rural province called Chuvashia. Nobody has ever heard about it. It's on the southeastern side of Russia. So before the Ural Mountains, before the Asia part begins, okay. We're considered the Eastern Europe, I guess. My parents, my mom was a teacher. She was my history teacher, and my dad was a doctor. They both are now retired. But I was, my childhood was still during the reign of the Soviet Union. I was in middle school when the Soviet Union finally collapsed and the new democratic, quote-unquote, Russia started.
Still communist.
Well, yeah, the remnants are still there. Yeah. Of course, it's hard to get rid of them.
Yeah.
They were indoctrinated for so long. So
was it a big change for you? Did you notice it as a child, or other than just the drama of it all?
Of course, no. I was already in, in the my adolescent years where I was aware of what was going on, and especially convenience-wise, once the old regime, so to speak, fell, we started having just, basic household problems such as blackouts, the gas shortage, food shortages, deficits.
Oh, really?
Yes, everybody was on food stamps, but it was because there was not enough supply of bread or oil, or the vegetable oil, and other essentials. This was called, people refer to it as dark years, years.
The collapse of the Soviet Union created a big hardship for Russia.
Yes, even more so than it was because, we didn't, Moscow was thriving regardless of the regime, but us small people, folks living in the provinces and the small republics and small rural areas, we never had a good life to begin with. It was just, for us, it was fine because, I was born into it. My childhood was happy. I was totally and completely fine with it. However, now that I'm seeing how, the other half lives or the other countries lived, and it was a big change.
It was existence for you. You didn't know any different.
Yeah.
So you had a happy, happy childhood. Born.
Exactly. Yes. I was happy regardless.
Yes.
That we didn't have, clothes that looked nice. Everybody was wearing the same thing. Everybody ate what they grew, basically, in their country homes. And
do you miss it?
Well, as much as anyone can miss their childhood.
Okay.
It was just simpler times. I do miss being close to my family. That's one thing.
So how did you get over here to the United States?
So once I when I graduated from college in Russia, I came over to Germany to continue my education, just to do like a little side program. And that's where I met my husband. He was in the army, and the U.S. military had some bases in Germany, throughout Germany, the remnants of the Cold War and the reparations and
such.
We
still have a lot of people over there. We have 20, 30,000 over there.
Yeah. Wow.
Still.
Well, the base in Würzburg, it was in Bavaria, Bayern, that closed down. But I'm sure the other larger bases are still there. But that's where we met in Germany, and shortly, or 3 or 4 years after he, oh no, more 7 or 8 years after he got out of the military, and he went back to Nevada, where his family lived in the time.
Had to be a shocker for you. You went to Vegas?
I did.
Oh my gosh.
I did go to Vegas.
From growing your own food to Vegas?
Yes.
It's a wonder you survived it.
I'm amazed myself. I'm just kidding.
But that's such an eyeful of like the glitter, the lights, the people, everything coming at you at once. I don't know how you could process it with you didn't ease into anything, did you?
Well, actually, my big shock, my first shock was going to New York City, because before we moved to the United States, my husband had been deployed to Iraq, and you know how they get R&R breaks? So he came over to the States, and I met him here prior to us even moving here, and we flew to New York City,
what year was that?
A shock. Ah, gosh. So we got married in 2005. 2006,
so
maybe, around.
So still very safe, very fun in New York right then?
Yes. Yeah. You know, everything is was safe. You know, I was such a naive.
So what play did you see?
You know, that time we did not see any play. We didn't have enough time, I think.
Okay.
We were still very young. We were not into that just yet.
Okay. Now, you see a play.
Yes, we actually did see Of Mice and Men recently.
So, oh, very good. Mm-hmm. Now, are you a fan of the ballet? Because you're Russian.
Well, I've seen my fair share, yes. Okay. It was almost mandatory to see one.
I would think so. You know,
opera and ballet, yes.
My son married a lady from the Ukraine. I had to go to the Ukraine, which is Russian influence heavily.
Absolutely,
But we had to go to the ballet. You know, we had to go to the ballet. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're growing your own food or not. You're going to go to the ballet.
Well, yes, when my husband came to the States, when I brought him to Russia, I took him to the ballet.
We saw the Nutcracker.
That's the one that I took my husband to.
Okay, well, see, I figured you were from Russia. You got to take a break.
Well, this is 560 AM, KBLU, Life, Death, and the Law. We'll be back more talking about Lana and her experience coming from Russia over to the United States and how that applies to the rest of us and what policy differences she sees and from a real life perspective. 560 AM, KBLU.
More thought-provoking conversation coming up next on Life, Death, and the Law, right here after this.
Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit yumaestateplanning.com.
If you enjoyed the warm weather yesterday, you'll like today. After today, the temperatures do begin to cool somewhat. Today's partly cloudy and breezy, 82. Tomorrow, a mix of sun and clouds, 80 the high. There is a lot of confusion about COVID-19, but one thing we know for sure, vaccines aren't enough. Check for fever, COVID's number one symptom, with the Exergen temporal scanner, and learn more at Exergen.com. I'm meteorologist Terry Smith from the Weather Channel.
Weather is brought to you by Ed Whitehead's Tire Pros, with four locations to serve all of your tire needs.
Last year alone, $55 million was wasted on Facebook advertising and another $48 million on Google by people who thought they knew what they were doing, but found themselves overbidding on search terms, buying wrong audiences, and using ineffective tactics. Wouldn't it be better to talk to someone who knew what they were doing from the start and could give you solid strategies and advice? Get free advice. Sign up for our business building e-tips and take the guesswork out of your marketing plans at yumaadvertising.com.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back, Yuma. This is Sean Garner. I'm in studio here with Mr. Russ Clark.
Good morning.
And we have our special guest here. This is Lana. She is a paralegal that works in my office, and she grew up in Russia. And oftentimes when we've got a little downtime between appointments, we'll talk just about what's going on in the weekend or some politics or policies that are interesting to us. And last week, and I've asked her from time to time over the, you've worked just over a year with us, right?
A little under a year.
Almost a year.
Yes,
okay.
Almost a year.
So, and prior to working with us, she worked for Access, right? And assisted people that needed state, that were applying for state benefits, and worked for the state government. And so she's come to work for our firm. We've really, really enjoyed her professionalism. She's quite expert in researching any issue that you need to. She is one of those letter to Garcia people, where knows how to get the letter to Garcia. And that's why she's so fun to have
you
around.
You know the book, right?
Yes, I have it on my desk, actually.
That's mine, working for Sean. That's good.
So conversation becomes very nice because we can talk about what's going on, and the perspectives, hopefully, and the dialogue in the office are open and respected on both directions. And so I had a question just last week, and it was, when she grew up, what was the perspective from the Russian government's point of view about World War II? How was the war won, and then how was the dividing up of Europe, and was it looked at as good, as bad? Was there an evil and a good side? Because me, growing up in the 80s, there was the good and the evil. You know, the United States was the good, and the Russian was the empire, empire.
You heard that from our news, our media, our politicians.
Certainly.
And she wasn't hearing that.
Yes.
And she was hearing a different source.
That exactly is what gives her such a unique perspective that I was so curious to learn about. So let's just go back to that conversation, shall we, Lana? So you going through grade school, what was your perception of the United States?
Well, quite honestly, I didn't learn about the United States until later, like until this, or I mean, I'm sure I heard of it or I knew of it, but my first conscious recollection of it was, and my mom being a history teacher, she had to teach us world history.
Your mother was the history teacher.
Yes,
for what grade?
She was my history from the fifth grade up until the 12th grade.
Like, okay.
She did it all.
And did she teach at home as well and kind of bring just the further learning around the dinner table?
Sure, yes, she did bring work home, and she would always buy a lot of books on that matter and then make us read them.
So as either a younger child, even without, and admittedly as kids we have misconceptions of other countries, right? Who's good, who's bad, what type of stereotypes certain people have. Did you have certain stereotypical perceptions of Americans and the United States in general? Because we were in this arms race, right? We were in the Cold War, and it was always us or them type of thing for me. It was either the Soviet Union was going to win and we're all going to be communist, or, you know, freedom was going to win out and there was going to be free democracy, right? So, and now I didn't understand the words of communism or democracy. I couldn't explain it as a kid, but I did know that there was Russia and the United States. Did you have that same type of perception that there were these two superpowers duking it out and that one was good and one was bad, or was it not as black and white?
Well, to be quite honest, the United States for us, I remember when I started learning English in the fifth grade, the United States for us was just a dream to go. Nobody thought that they would be able to go there. We thought that everyone here was rich, that it was just, compared to where I come from. So everyone wanted to visit or live in the United States.
So you didn't think of the United States as
an enemy.
Absolutely not.
Somebody
no.
to conquer, to bring under the regime so that the world could see... You know, humanity in its correct light.
Did that come from your politicians at all? Would they give anti-American rhetoric at all from the leadership? Not to recollection.
No, And I wasn't, you know, as a child, I wasn't much interested in the politics.
Yeah, who is as a child, right?
Exactly, you don't have to be yet. You
know. But I quite honestly cannot recollect any negative...
And that's a misconception on me, Sean, because I think of Russia more like North Korea, you know, and North Korea.
Yeah.
You know, they're afraid of us. Because like
certainly back in the 80s, I thought of it that way. Today, I don't as much.
And you look at Japan during World War II. There were people jumping off cliffs to kill themselves for fear of Americans capturing them. And
yes.
And doing unthinkables.
And arming every last woman, child, you know,
jumped.
Old person to the tilt, you know, they were going to fight with pitchforks,
yes,
you know, if necessary, because
the devil,
the reign under the Americans was going to be worse than death itself,
yes.
And so there was this propaganda that at least when we got it right on our end, what was perceived to be broadcasted in those other countries, that's what we understood. And that's why I'm so curious from somebody that has a first person knowledge of what actually occurred in the country and what was the general rhetoric that occurred.
It's more open than I thought.
Yeah. When did you talk about America with your schoolmates?
Yes. And when I was going to school in Russia, the period of what we call the thaw started. So after the Cold War, it started thawing.
That was interesting. The thaw is the
softening of a climate towards Western, you know, ideations in general.
Great.
And, so the America, the United States and Germany started, not the Germany per se, but Europe in general started slowly sending goods and not legally, mind you. Like jeans were smuggled, Coca-Cola and gum.
You weren't allowed to have jeans?
Well, no.
Oh.
Not in the very beginning. They were smuggled.
Mm-hmm. Shameless.
They were sold for miraculous amounts of money. But
I do remember hearing that Levi's in particular, like even an old pair of Levi's, because as a young kid, you know, and I'm scraping, you know, lemonade money for a bicycle or whatever I wanted to buy at that time. And I remember hearing, you know, in Russia, your old jeans go for a lot of money. I'm like, well, how do I get them to Russia? I don't want to. So that's amazing. So describe your general day-to-day living situation. What type of housing did you live in? What type of transportation did you have? What were the clothes like? I'm just so curious.
Well, we lived in an apartment in a two-story building with multiple families in that building.
How many families?
Well, 30 maybe.
Okay, so
it was
a huge
house.
Apartment.
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So ours was a two-bedroom apartment. I shared it with my younger sister and my parents, obviously.
Okay.
And then
not,
two three-bedroom. Yeah. Two, three bedrooms normally, or one to two bedrooms is the norm. The norm back in Russia. I always walked to school because, first of all, it wasn't far. And secondly, my dad, even though he had a car by then, he wouldn't take it out on such insignificant tasks as taking the kids, menial tasks.
Yeah.
No, you could walk. We walked everywhere.
About
there was
how
no
far?
Public transportation. Oh, it was maybe 8 to 10 minutes. I would run home
a mile,
sometimes.
Yeah, maybe
a
less.
Mile. Yes.
Okay.
Very close. So everybody walked home or to school and ran home, you know. Everybody kind of wore the same type of clothing.
How would you buy your clothing?
Well, the clothes.
Did you have the school shopping at the beginning of the school year?
Well, the good thing was that we had school uniforms, so that saved it for us, for everyone. If your parents knew someone who worked in commerce, like at a clothing store, then you could get some stuff that didn't look like everyone else's. But if your parents didn't know anyone, then you were stuck with whatever was available for public consumption, so to speak, for everyone to buy.
And what are we talking about? Specific colors or any color under the spectrum?
Oh, you know, very drab, more like a subdued, darker colors. That's it. Yeah, just the drab colors. If you wanted something bright, you needed to go out of the way and potentially either do a favor to someone who was in that area who could hook you up later with someone who could sell you nice like summer clothes or...
And they would get it on the black market or something? Or where would they get it? Because was it made in Russia?
Yes, it was. Some of it, well, nice clothing was produced in Russia. However, not everyone was, and there was a huge demand for it, but not everyone was getting it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a quota, how much clothing, how much goods and services a certain region would get. But it was all distributed through a few, select or chosen people. And they would give those items to people that they wanted to.
So the distributors were the holders of the true power.
Yes, yes, basically.
How many changes of clothes would you have?
Well, maybe like two or three.
Okay.
They were nice clothes. The rest, you know.
How about
they
shoes?
Were just...
How many pair of shoes would you have at a given time?
Well, one winter boots, one autumn boots, and then the summer sandals.
So
maybe
she
two.
Was better off than you.
My mom used to tell me, my oldest brother, because whenever I'd want a new pair of jeans or a shirt, she would say, you know, your oldest brother, who is actually 12 years older than me, and they were totally in poverty when he was born. She said he had one red shirt, one red and white shirt, one white and red shirt, and one white shirt with red on it. I said, are you sure you didn't just describe it to him? To, like, that was one shirt, you know, describing
shirt.
It three ways. No, he had three shirts. I was like, okay. Because, you know, I'd look in my closet and I'd have 10 shirts and I'd say, Mom, I need something new. And she would say, no, look, you've got shirts in there. You've got jeans. Well, I don't like these jeans. They're not in style. You have jeans. You can wear those, right? So she was trying to put it into perspective for me. I'm really curious to learn more about just the basic lifestyle growing up into Russia. And we'll come back and we'll talk more about this. This is Life, Death, and the Law, 560 AM, KBLU.
Have a question? Our phone lines are open. Call 344-5258. That's 344-KBLU.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
Spectrum Mobile is reinventing wireless again. Get unlimited on 2-plus lines for $29.99 a month per line. No contracts, no added taxes or fees. Includes nationwide 5G. Save up to 60% with Spectrum Mobile. Get unlimited on 2-plus lines for $29.99 a month. Call 855-438-2999 or visit a store near you.
Offer valid for new customers on 2-plus unlimited lines. Spectrum Internet required. Savings based on 2-line comparison of unlimited plans among major national carriers as of 9/2021. Prepaid excluded. Restrictions apply.
The holiday season has arrived. For businesses, the 10 busiest days of the holiday season are predicted to be Black Friday, the day after Black Friday, December 4th, the second Saturday in December, Super Saturday, December 18th, Sunday before Christmas, Tuesday before Christmas, December 23rd, the day after Christmas. Your business needs to be talking to people now to capture your share of the holiday market. Don't wait and have it pass you by. This year, learn how to communicate effectively this holiday season at YumaAdvertising.com.
If they were in the business of building better vacuum cleaners, chances are your rug would be pretty darn clean. If they spent the time thinking about lawnmowers, you'd probably be the envy of your neighbors. If piecing together go-karts was their bag, you'd be the fastest kid in the alley. They'd probably be good at a lot of different things, but they're in the business of building motorcycles, and it's what they do best. Harley-Davidson brand motorcycles. The time is now for you to make the lifelong commitment to ride. Visit Bobby's Territorial Harley-Davidson today at 2550 East Gila Ridge Road in Yuma.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back, Yuma. This is Sean Garner. I'm an attorney with Deason, Garner, and Hanson, and we do estate planning. But sometimes we don't want to talk just about estate planning here on the radio.
Right. People get to know who you are and what you stand for. That's good.
So if you would like to get your affairs in order, if you'd like to understand what an outline would look like that shows how your assets are held and how they can be managed in case something occurs to you in the event of incapacity or death, who you might want to manage your day-to-day affairs or distribute your assets upon your death, give us a call. Our phone number is 783-4466. That's 783-4466. Or go to yuma.law. It really doesn't get easier than that. yuma.law. And our website will pop up. You can watch a free seminar that talks about what a will is, what a trust is, the difference between the two. It's a half hour long, and it's very bearable. It's not nearly as boring as it sounds. It's actually quite informational. We've got some pretty good feedback about it. Watch the video. And we've actually had up to 500 reviews about the seminar and the education that we provided about wills and trusts and getting your estate planning in order, about real people that have participated in it. So if you want to learn more about that, please go do that. But right now on the radio, we're going to talk about something what I find far more interesting right now, and that is what life was like as a regular person without any spin from a political angle, because we've got Lana here, and she grew up in what was the Soviet Union and now is Russia. And talk to us, as you were going through grade school and high school, what were those called, first of all? What was grade school called? What was high school called?
The grade school is called middle school, secondary school. Uh-huh. The high school, we just called them the elder classes. There was no name. I don't think there was a name, any particular name for the high school. It was just classes, grades 9 through 12 or 11 back then.
Did most kids attend all of high school? Were most people graduates from high school that were in your era?
In rural areas, such as the one I come from, it was common for almost 70% of graduates to drop out to graduate at the eighth grade or after the ninth grade, mm-hmm. and to go to a trade school.
So we're talking 13-year-olds.
No, more like 15-year-olds.
Oh, okay, all right. So was high school 4 years or was it fewer years than that?
In my time, it was just 3 years.
3 years.
Grades 9, 10, and 11. 11, yes.
Oh, okay. Got it. So during high school, what was the political, what type of political party was it? Was it a communist party or during that era in your life?
So it was the ending years, the final years of the Communist Party.
Uh-huh. What year did you graduate high school? Sorry.
1997.
Okay. So we graduated the same year.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that. Okay.
You're a little older than me, I think.
Oh, of course. So you graduated in 97. And so was there a big change in your perspective as far as where the country was heading and from where it had been during the three years that you spent in high school?
So actually, I think the Soviet Union started collapsing around 1991, and that process ended in 1993. And even though technically it was still a communist party, but I remember the general secretary by the name of Boris Yeltsin,
mm-hmm.
Was getting elected, and the whole country was just on the was so elated and excited. I remember as a child, I was graffitiing the walls of the public restroom saying, vote Yeltsin, go Yeltsin.
And why? What did he represent for you?
Freedom and liberty and the end of Cold War and more open relationships with outside world.
So freedom, to me, I had no concept of what it was because I had to do whatever my parents told me, right? So I didn't have any freedom as a child, you know? And so I understood, and they told me all the time, you know, you live in a free country. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? Because everything isn't free. Everything costs. I got to work for it. I got to be home when my parents tell me to. I got to go to bed when they tell me to. What is freedom? Are people that live in unfree countries, are they all in jail? So I didn't really get that concept, but describe to me what your concept of freedom versus, and what would be the antithesis of freedom to you? What was the other side of freedom?
And it's, you know, we have a different perspective as a child.
Yeah,
exactly. You don't realize the full extent of what is happening. And I'm sure a lot of it came from my parents because my parents were progressive thinking. Like my mom, she even refused to become a member of the Communist Socialist Party. She was one of the dissidents.
So you didn't get a bright pink shirt.
No, she didn't. I still had my Pioneers red handkerchief. I wasn't that part, but I didn't. My parents did not join the party.
I'm saying you didn't get the favors of being linked into the hierarchy.
Oh no, I didn't.
Of the socialist secretaries and.
No, I did not do. No, I was not privy to that.
Okay.
So they were excited about that because that seemed to them to be a good idea. And of course, I absorbed a lot of their, you know, moods at that moment. But also, I did know that it was hard for any Soviet citizen, you know, Soviet Union citizens to get to a foreign country, to travel abroad, to go anywhere they wanted. So I was hoping that once Yeltsin gets
elected. So freedom was the ability to.
To travel outside
of the country, if you like, and come back, if you like, just at your own will.
Yes.
Okay.
Also, I thought that the market would definitely benefit from that, and we would get nicer clothing and, you know, foods such as, again, Pepsi Cola. That was my first American beverage that I've ever tried in my life. Uh-huh. And then they would be more in abundance. We would get more gum, you know, the silly things that a child is looking forward to.
So did you conceptualize that freedom was the ability to work and keep the proceeds of your labor? Was that a concept to you at that age, that freedom was the ability to work and to keep the property or any type of benefit from the services that you offered?
Own property, yes, because for instance, even the apartment that we lived in, my parents and I lived in, it wasn't ours. It belonged to the state, to the Soviet Union. And
what was yours? Where did it draw the line? What was yours and what was not yours?
Only thing that was ours was a vehicle that my dad purchased.
Okay.
And the clothing and the furniture that we owned at that time.
So the furniture was yours? Inside
the furniture
the
was ours, yes.
Okay.
And the clothing and, you know, the utensils and such. But the apartment itself was not ours until Yeltsin was allowed privatization.
And so you talked about this car that your dad owned. Now, your parents sound well-educated. What were their professions?
My father is a retired doctor. However, he still works.
So he was a doctor at the time you were growing up?
He was a doctor, yes.
Okay.
And my mom is a retired history teacher.
So they both had university degrees, and then your dad went on to medical school.
Yes.
And did your mom go beyond university and get a master's degree?
Well, our university is a master's degree and plus 1 year. So she was toying with an idea to get a PhD, but then two children, it was just too hard for her.
And what was the incentive to go on and further the education and achieve the level of education that they received? Why did they do that?
Well, my dad, he just did it to spite, to show that he's not defined by his background. He came from a very extremely poor province, even poorer than my mom, where my mom was from. He came from the province that did not speak Russian. His mom my paternal grandmother did not speak Russian. They spoke their Chuvash language, which is a small regional language that not too many people even speak nowadays. So he just wanted to defy his odds, and he did not know his father.
But
so
the,
he just
the
wanted to get
perspective or the potential to obtain more for his abilities and his higher learning and the services that he would be able to provide was never an incentive for him, because under communism, you don't get more based on your level of learning, correct?
Oh, yeah, that is correct. Yes, it doesn't matter how many degrees you have, you still get paid more.
Uh-huh.
That differentiation did start after the collapse of the Soviet Union. They did start giving you more incentives. Not much, mind you, but mm-hmm. still, financially, you were you would receive more.
So the fact that your father had a car, was that common? Because of the 30 families that lived in your apartment complex, how many of those families had cars?
I think only two or three families in that apartment complex owned a vehicle. And you would have to put your name on a waiting list. And some people waited for 8 to 10 years. I believe we waited at least 7 years to get this vehicle. It was exciting.
And so was it just pure luck that he got it? Or what did it have anything to do with his higher education and the fact that he and your mother both were very highly educated?
It wasn't pure luck. I think what happened, as I was telling you guys, our region would only get a certain percentage, like a certain number of vehicles. So whoever got the vehicle before him, well, if they got four vehicles per year, then, you know, just the four people before him would have gotten these vehicles, but
okay,
not him, yeah.
So it's simply luck.
Simply luck, yes. Okay. I don't think there was any bribery.
We'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about that and what type of vehicle it was. This is 560 AM KBLU, Life, Death, and Law.
Have a question? Our phone lines are open. Call 344-5258. That's 344-KBLU.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit yumaestateplanning.com.
Hey guys, there is some important news that all men should take very seriously. Your prostate health. Are you urinating more frequently? Are you waking up at night to urinate? Are you sick and tired of prostate pills that just don't work? Sound familiar? If you are one of the millions of men with prostate problems that are driving you nuts, there is some great news. Prostagenix is the all-natural product that beat over 157 other prostate supplements in lab tests and was rated the number one most powerful prostate supplement in the world. Number one, because it works. So why not try some Prostagenix and your prostate troubles will be a thing of the past. You'll get a great night's sleep and stop waking up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. To get your free bottle of Prostagenix, call now, 800-600-2020. That's 1-800-600-2020. Take advantage of our 90-day money-back guarantee. Call 800-600-2020. Do it now.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back, Yuma. This is Sean Garner. I'm in studio here with Lana. Lana, she grew up in Russia and worked her way through Europe. And give me a quick overview of your travels from where you grew up in Russia throughout Europe to where you finally ended up in the United States.
So I grew up in the central Russia or southeastern Russia. I graduated from high school and then college there, and then I came to Germany to further my education, where I met my husband, who was in the military, in the U.S. military. And from Germany, we went on to live in Reno.
So why did you go to Germany?
There was a program there. Well, first I went to Germany as a nanny, actually. When I was in the fourth year of my college, I just wanted to get away from Russia. My cousin drowned at that time, so it wasn't a good time for me. I wanted to just get away from that life.
Mm-hmm.
And I was selected to go for that nanny program, where I lived with a German family for a year, and I got to travel, learn the German language.
Had you studied German in high school?
No, I studied. It was my minor at the university in Russia.
Oh, okay. Yes. So as part of the education process, and you know, you wanted to get immersed in the language, so you wanted to go over there and live there.
Correct.
And what was your major?
My major was teaching English as a second language.
Oh, okay.
And linguistics. It's kind of mingled.
So you started learning English in high school.
Correct.
Or fifth grade.
No, fifth grade, yes. And that's secondary school, considered secondary school for us.
And continued on in high school. And then you began learning German in college.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you're about to graduate from college, you go to immerse yourself in the German language.
Mm-hmm.
Is it primarily to become fluent in German, or was it to kind of just expand your horizons as far as geographically as well?
Well, both, because prior to coming to Germany, I had not traveled. I had not been anywhere other than my little province, Chuvashia, where I was born and grew up in. So it was both for language reasons and to travel.
How difficult was it to go over? Because you'd learned some German. You studied, 3 years of German before you went over there to Germany?
2 years.
Okay, two years of German in school. But it's different when you're learning German in school as opposed to trying to actually speak it.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Was it really difficult to pick it up and to then start becoming conversational?
It wasn't difficult. Living with a family that did not, even though they did speak English, they didn't want to talk English to me. So they only spoke German,
mm-hmm.
and the children. So I was kind of learning German alongside their children.
And do you feel like you spoke English fluently?
Well, certainly more fluently than German, but not as fluent as I am now.
And obviously. So the fluency in English, because I'll tell you what, I don't think that I could say two or three words in Russian, and even now, and certainly not as a high school kid or middle school kid. And so I'm interested, was it just general curriculum to learn English, or was that a curriculum that you selected out?
Yes, it is a part of general curriculum to learn English in Russia. Now they actually are starting even earlier, I think in the second or third grade. But I was just, when I started learning English in the fifth grade, mm-hmm. in the secondary school, I loved it so much. And I, right from the get-go, I decided that it will be my career.
Really?
It would be my career. And I never faltered from that course. And my parents wanted me to become an accountant or a doctor.
Did you excel when you were learning English?
Yes.
Really? Okay.
We all disappointed our parents, too.
So they learned to live with that.
Yeah. So, okay, so you're learning English, you start to learn German after you graduate high school, and then you met your husband in Germany, and that makes sense that you come over and you live with your husband here in the United States. So you're getting back to your father getting this car. So he's one of three families that of 30 in your apartment complex that has a car. And so tell me about this process of him getting the car, and tell me what the car was like.
I honestly did not even know that it was our time, that, you know, our time in line to get a car finally was here. I remember it was the end of my ninth school year, and the summer holidays just started, and then my dad ran home from the hospital where he worked, and he was just shouting that he finally got a call that he's getting this car.
So you are 15, 16 years old, do you
even
remember?
Younger, yeah, like maybe 13, 14.
Okay.
And we had to borrow some money because you had to pay for the car cash right then and there. It wasn't, there were no credit cards, there were no loans back then. So we just scrambled and borrowed from everyone, from all the relatives and
Do you remember
friends.
How much it was?
It was 9,000 rubles.
Which is equivalent to what?
Oh goodness! It was a crappy old car. I mean, it was a new crappy car, but it was very crappy. It was like horrible, but it was paradise for us. Maybe $1,000.
$1,000.
If that.
Okay.
Because you know the currency.
Right. Right now it's $120. 9,000 rubles is 120 in today's currency.
Oh wow! Well then, yes, it was $100. Wow.
You had a $100 car. What a piece of crap.
It was brand new, but it was one of the Russian brands. It's called Moskvich, mm-hmm. which is the word. The word is derived from the name of the capital, Moskva, and then you add the itch to make it a different word. And mm-hmm. It was just one of the models that Russia, the Soviet Union, was making along with Zhiguli.
So, how was it? A five-seater, four-door?
It was a four-door, five-seater, bright, like baby blue color, beautiful okay. color.
Uh-huh.
There was no AC. You could not roll down the windows.
Cloth seats.
Oh, I'm sure.
Or vinyl. Like,
vinyl. I think it was. I don't know. It was not cloth. It was not leather for sure. Mm-hmm. It could have been cheap.
Was
vinyl,
it
yeah.
was it hot in the summertime where you lived? Did you
it
need
did.
It?
Did
you need
get
AC?
Hot. Yeah.
Okay.
Like in June, July, it did get hot to maybe like our 80s, but it's humid.
In the wintertime, did it snow?
Oh yes, it started snowing in October. It would, and the snow would stay till March.
And the car would do
March.
Well in the snow and in the cold.
No, we would not even be. My dad was terrified to drive it in the snow because it did not have the snow tires. It just had the regular stock tires that it came with.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would slip and slide. And he got so terrified one time driving us that he would kill his entire family. So he just stocked it. He would put it in the garage until it unthawed. And then when the summer came or the spring came, that's when he would take it out for a spin.
So now, okay, the car buying experience is a bit different. So, grocery stores. What did grocery stores look like? How was it to go grocery shopping?
You would go inside. There was a small building. You could not go to the shelves and pick whatever you wanted. You would tell the sales associate like what you needed, and they would give you that. Please measure me 2 kilos of sugar, or mm-hmm. please give me 2 loaves of rye bread.
And how do you pay for it?
Rubles.
So you get paid a salary. Based on the family members that are in your household, or how is the salary based?
From what I remember, there was a list of for each profession, for each occupation, this was the set amount that you were allowed to receive as a salary. And if you lived in a rural area, you would get an incentive for that. My dad being, he was one of the doctors that did the anesthesia, so he would get
he's
that.
An anesthesiologist.
Yeah, he is an anesthesiologist, ENT. He does all kinds of stuff on double
that. So an anesthesiologist makes on average about $300,000 to $500,000 a year.
He didn't make that much.
He didn't make that much.
No, he did not. He's still...
So an anesthesiologist, so that's highly specialized profession, not only just a medical doctor, but obviously with anesthesia.
Mm-hmm.
So he would get a bit more in his salary than maybe somebody that was a farmer?
Oh, definitely, yeah. He would get more. He would get paid much more than the farmer. I don't think farmers got paid anything. I think for the longest time, they were getting barter. Like they would get grain as their salary, or like wheat. 5 bags of potatoes, 3 bags of wheat,
mm-hmm.
This piece of land, this is what you get salary-wise. I don't think they saw cash.
So ever. When you're, did your mom send you to the grocery store to do the shopping, or who did the shopping?
Sometimes she would send me or my sister when uh-huh. she was old enough to get such as, because there were different stores. You would have to go to one store to get milk or sour cream. You would have to the other store to get meat.
Nothing equivalent to like a Safeway or let's say a Fry's?
No, not until much later.
Is there a store in town that you would say it's more equivalent to that like in Yuma that we could say this is the type of store that it would look like?
No, not I've never seen such stores here, maybe in Jamaica when we went traveling there, or like in the rural Mexico. Mm-hmm. I saw something like this where, you know, there's a sales girl up front and you tell her what you want. And it's, you know, you get five, selection of five in each category if you're lucky. And that was basically what it was in Russia.
So, and did you feel like you had nice meals? Could your mom, did she have enough to buy whatever types of food that you wanted?
Well, it was not store-bought. We supplemented ours from my grandma's, from my parents, from my grandparents' house, like from what they grew, or the cattle. They had a cow, so we would have milk and meat, beef eventually.
Okay.
So that was what accounted for nice meals.
This has been so interesting. I really appreciate your willingness to come on the show and just talk to us about what it's like growing up in another country, because a lot of us don't know what it's like, and we take for granted what we do have here. Do you feel like you are rich now?
Absolutely.
That's good.
Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure being here. Thank you for having me.
Well, that's all the time that we have for today. This is 560 AM, Life, Death, and Law. And join us next week.
Call the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
The preceding show on 560 KBLU was a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters LLC, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
From the 1 Hour Air Conditioning and Heating Studio, this is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.